Can you address or somebody address open attention?
Okay.
I see it in our, you know, what we're supposed to do, and I sort of feel like I get it, but I'm not sure. And it feels like it's a perfect follow-up to the discussion we're just having.
I think it is. And this could be, we could be here until the cows come home, because it has been a question of a question of a question for a long time. So I think it would be helpful if we go chronologically. I mean, I can respond, and we have all been in this discussion together, but I think it's helpful because there's many same words that were approached differently as the evolution of continuum happened in the last 50 years of Emily's life. So what I would love to do is like invite Beth to respond first, since she's one of the very first ones. And then Rachel, if you have anything to add also, because you have been around in continuum since the 70s. And then Shana and I can share our experience that we are more in the latter part of continuum. Is that okay with everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, Beth, you're on.
Yeah, so it and Marcel is right. All the teachers have been talking about this because it's from different points of view. It was a different thing. When I first learned open attention, and I was just thinking about this recently, it's an invitation to approach without bias this moment. So it's an approach without bias. There's no bias. There's no direction, there's no demand, there's no, there's nothing that is being asked of you at all. So it's a completely open attention to this very moment. So it might be that, and a lot of times it was kind of like, it looked like Savasana, you know, in a yoga class. So it was like, there was not a lot happening on the outside, there was so much movement that was starting to unfold from the inside that became the main focus of it was basically doing nothing. So then over the years, it became, okay, allow in from that place of no bias, what can you feel as an authentic, and this is the question, is it an authentic movement that's arising from a direct experience, or is it a movement that's arising from the past, or a movement that you think you should do? Or so there's a lot of ways that, you know, in my teaching, what I like to say is it can become open movement, where it's actually an expression of that non-biased state that actually has a movement persona. So that's how I learned it.
Rachel, you want to add anything since you were there at that time? I cannot hear you.
Okay. Beth was very complete in what she said, but I think I first learned it as after you did whatever the sounds and the movements that were suggested. Then you went into a period of open attention, mm-hmm. and you listened, as Beth said, you listened for some movement to arise. And then out of that, you started to move. I think over time, I also think of it as a part of my movement. I think what Beth called open movement, that, you know, in the midst of movement, I might pause and kind of check in, where am I, what am I doing, so that I don't just get caught up in the whatever I'm doing.
Thank you. Shana, you want to say something?
Wow, this is such a big subject that has no substance. Well, when I came to Continuum, the first thing, Emily had just made a shift from using music as a cue during the dive to no music whatsoever. And a lot of the teachers were still using music, and Emily wasn't using music at all. And I asked her why. And what she said was that the magician who creates the music is creating already a conversation and an ambience. And that is going to take you someplace. And if you're really listening without any, in a sense, outside input, which of course isn't really true because you're in a field and there's all kinds of invisible movement, but she just said, I needed to get rid of that because I found that a lot of people were moving and being cued by the music and not really being able to feel their own impulse. And by impulse, I mean how the fluid had begun to wake up and move you. And so she just felt that the music had such a strong impact on shaping people's movement that she got rid of it. So I don't use any music whatsoever. And one of the purposes for me of open attention is to be able to actually feel the effect of the sounding in the waking up of the fluid potency. Most of the time we're moving through habit, even beautiful habit. But can we just wait for the fluid to begin to show itself, its movement, and begin to move us? So that's one thing about open attention. Even though Emily would sometimes ask you to initiate a movement and then see how the fluid would pick that up. The other thing I want to say is that a lot of my work and Emily's work is working with people who are deeply compromised. And that is a very different situation than just coming into a continuum class. Of course, we all have our issues, but I'm talking about deeply compromised situations. And so this way of working where you use sound because it can de-densify tissue so quickly and then listen afterwards to what begins to move is a huge, I use the word therapeutic moment for somebody who's paralyzed or can't breathe, when they actually begin to feel their fluid wake up. And so this play between sounding and bringing in, creating a lot of disturbance and perturbation, and then just going into reception, and then seeing and experiencing and listening and feeling and allowing that to move you as an impulse is just so radically different than the kind of way that we impulsively and habitually move, and it feels good to us. So I think open attention is a very radical form of listening and trusting and allowing, including not being able to feel anything, and finding a way to welcome that. And I'm sorry, David, I'm just going to mention this. I hope it's okay with you, but David and I were once talking about our experience in the beginning of Continuum, and he said something like, well, I mean, I didn't move for like a year. And that level of being able to incubate, gestate, and wait is a huge, huge window of new possibility. And because, as Emily would say, our mind is an associative addict. We have a sensation, we've already jumped on it and told ourselves what it is, rather than the possibility that it could be something extraordinarily new. So open attention is a place to discover the freshness and aliveness of your organism and its unique expression. So that's what I would say. Sorry I'm so long-winded, but what to do?
Thank you. David, you want to add anything? Because you have been very close to Emily also for a lot of the evolution of the work, and it would be interesting if you have anything to contribute.
Yeah, I was thinking the term for first order experience that Emily would occasionally speak to.
Yeah.
So it was like where you, it's like a pure experiencing of before any concepts or ideas of what you're feeling or sensing. So it's, if anybody has more on the first order experience, but that's, for me, that's kind of what it was, where we'd just be present with, in that non-biased, non-judgmental, welcoming kind of way. Yeah. And just that. Yeah, that's all I had.
Thank you. Do you want to say something, Frances?
Yeah, if it's okay, I'm not a teacher, though.
Frances, all of us are teachers here, so okay. Please.
I don't know if somebody mentioned this already, but to me, you know, you've been talking about rhythms and flow, and it's very much about that. This kind of expansive sea kelp, sea anemone thing that happens very much along what Shana's been saying and Beth. And then it's kind of like a musical phrase, and it comes to a rest. And then all the things people have been saying about the openness, the interest, the relaxation, and turning off the director, you know, like, we live so better do this, better do that. I think it's hard when you start continuum to not think that there's something you should be doing. So it's kind of like that breathing. And then, yeah, something arises and that phrase unfolds and then you come back down. And that's a beautiful thing.
Thank you. So I don't have too much to add, since there's a lot of totally things, perfect things that have been said. But one of the things that I just wanted to mention was, like, you know, like Shana was saying, the evolution of continuum and the relevancy of how Emily kept the same concepts that were brought in the 70s relevant until her transition in 2014. And that meant that the work itself had to shift in certain ways. So for those of you back then, there were drums and very strong music and very forceful moments. And then there was this moment of open attention because people were really disconnected, and there was what enlivens people, what brings sensation. And at that time it was like, okay, more music, pounding, bigger movement, they're screaming, and all that. Okay, now that kept on going until she realized, in her own book she writes, okay, the movements are too forceful. Until you understand the subtlety and the effect of sound in the body and what that arises in your own fluid system, you don't know the movement, you don't know movement. So she closed the studio and started opening a very different inquiry. And the different inquiry was that then there was a lot more stimuli and people were very much involved in practices like Diamond Heart, and we were all in our head trying to figure out who did that to us when, in order to then bring the body and scream and pound the pillow and get it out on something. So she said, okay, that's good, yet we are losing that first order experience that is sensation, and we are completely away from our body. So that's when she stopped using the music, and she invited to really, what are the going deeper into it, fix the sounds. And in my experience, the sounds became more subtle, less projected out, more internal in the body, much more quiet. And then the open attention, I think the key on that concept is the concept of attention. And the attention, like Beth was saying, with no bias. And the attention where everything is welcome and nothing is being pushed away. So like Shana and David were experiencing, no movement is part of open attention. Subtle movement is part of open attention. Uncomfortable sensation is part of open attention. So it's like an orchestrated piece of music of like, the crescendo goes and then you peak, this beautiful thing, and then you get the pain and then the restriction shows up. So is there movement outwardly visible? Sometimes. Can it be super quiet, but you feel like a lot of shifting and movement in the internal? And again, I love to bring it back to that metaphor of the ocean. So we are all polyrhythmic. So the faster movements are very available. And sometimes we need to go through the faster movements to even be able to sense what's underneath that. And then when you really stop after, like, you have done the sequence, the sound, and prepare the tissue for your mind, because the continuum is very tricky, you know? You need to think about things and do this sound, and the teacher is telling you, put the hands here, and then you, but it's just a distraction, because then you're really engaged, and at the same time, you opening the tissue, you allowing the sounds to penetrate in a very kind of non, we are not trying to sell you anything, we're not trying to give you a doctrine, we are not trying to say this or that. You're just doing an ass sound in your body, but your body is remembering where it came from. All those millions and billions of years of planetary existence that end up being Gaby or Susan or Shane or Marcella, we carried on that. So when we have that caressing and we preparing, we open up to receiving those ancient memories of movement and expression that usually when we are in our day-to-day life going by our own business, we need to quiet it down because it's difficult. Like Emily said, it will be very difficult for me to brush my teeth and get to class on time if I was in the dissolve being living as a sea kelp in a sea forest under the water. So, you know, is there value in the more faster rhythms? Yes. And yet the open attention is to really become familiar. So what's deeper? What's slower? What's longer? And how that expresses as an outward movement that then can start informing the rest of your life. Oy, so those were a lot of words, Gaby, for a very short question. And if we were more teachers, we can keep on talking about this until the next generation of continuum. Did that answer and clarify?
Oh anything? My gosh. I'm so glad I asked this. And good. It feels very yin.
Yes.
Can I say one more thing?
Please.
Because when David brought in first order experience, I think there's something about epistemics was a big part of the evolution of continuum. And first order experience in the work of Samuel Bois, which Emily's husband at the time was immersed in, it talks about these different orders of experience. So first order experience is silent and sensory, like Hannah's baby is doing right now. So I love that, you know, that's a first order experience. And then slowly we learn to evaluate our experience. That's the second order. And then we interpret our evaluation. That's the third order. And it goes up to, I think, five or six orders. I don't know it all, but most of us don't even have a relationship with the silent immediate experience unless we get curious. So I just thought it's important to recognize that it's happening right
before
us.
Yeah, that's great. Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing that one point on, because that was perfect. I just wanted to read a couple of sentences of how Emily talks about open experience or open attention in her book. So like Shania was saying, she worked a lot with paralysis and people that are paralyzed. So she's describing this guy who is a paraplegic, and she says, I can see that I have engaged his interest, and she's doing the sounds and movements on top of his tissue. And a gleam is now in his eyes, and he appears more animated. He's eager to see if his lens of awareness can go beyond his habit. We try again. Sounds that lateralize combine the sounds that are tubular, creating a kind of music. These sounds engage different sections of his throat and tongue. We enter into open attention, and I watch him smile as he sits in front of me with closed eyes, apparently registering something more than his usual response. And I think that's the key. He's registering something more than his usual response. He is in open attention for several minutes, harvesting the movements and sensations that the sounds have stimulated. After some time, he opens his eyes. There's a general softening of his system, more color to his skin. A quiet energy envelops his body, and he is present. So I think that in that few words, whether you came in the 70s or in the 2000s, that is the expression, like harvesting the movements and the sensations that the sounds have stimulated. And that is what has been expressed. So does it need to look like something? No. But it's like, can you widen your vocabulary of how much in sensation world you can receive and you can sense, and allow that to be the mover? So I just wanted to bring Emily's voice. So we are all talking of what we receive, but she talks first order experience in her book as well. So thank you for the question. It's always really rich and enriching to talk about this. And in our retreats, we have had a whole discussions for days on this topic, and it keeps resurfacing. So it's really good for new eyes to listen to how we go deeper into the inquiry over and over as teachers of the same topic. So thank you, Gaby. Hope it's helpful. Yeah. I love this tease. There's always, nobody knows what is going to emerge, but it's so enriching for me as a facilitator, that to hear everybody else and how to answer the questions in the same way. So thank you, all of y'all, because it's really fun for me.
I just want to add a little thing about the way open attention influences my life. Mm. You know, to learn, I practice Quaker practice, and there they talk about it as listening inward to your light. But that habit of stopping in the midst of your life just to listen in, even if you don't have time to do some movement. I was very struck by when you were talking about, what you just read from Emily, how just listening and feeling the flush of energy move, or something release, or something sigh within you, it in that moment you have a shift and everything is broader and wider, and it gets you out of the repetitive traps that we get in our routines through our day. So it's also something that's just helpful to do in your everyday life.
Thank you, Rachel. That's really well put. Thank you so much. And I want us to all bring your attention to Robin in Hannah's daughter. So if we can witness her for a moment, and again, keep your eyes soft and just look at the quality of her movement. I mean, that is beyond precious. So that is open attention. She moves, she pauses, she tries again, and then she discovers, and then nothing is happening. Just let that touch you, really, because she is the best demonstration right now of all the words, interpretations, teachings that we have put on it. And let that movement touch you, because that is when we are in a continuum demonstration, that is what's happening. Us, as facilitators of the work, show you what's possible. And look at this, that's what's possible. But you can see the inquiry and the pausing and the just being with the feeling, and there's no overlay of thinking about it and trying to interpret. Yes, we're talking about you, I know. Hi, Robin, thank you. Oh my God, look at that. She's like, oh, people, lots of people and whatever. Oh, and I'm so happy you brought her and you put her in this way that we can really demo what open attention looks like. Oh, that is just precious. And you see, you don't get bored from witnessing that, but we get pulled out of our experiencing that because of our mental activity. So, you know, she's totally engaged, and that is the secret of the open attention, the engagement piece. Look at that. I mean, I can witness a baby the whole day long, but that's a different story.